I'm Greg Johnson. This is Countercurrents Radio. I'm joined here today with Matt Heimbach of Towson University. Matt is a senior at Towson, and he is the founder of Towson's White Student Union and has made quite a splash recently in international news. Welcome, Matt.
Yeah, it's a pleasure to be here.
So, Matt, tell us about your most recent event. You had Jared Taylor come and speak.
Yeah, well, it was great. The first event the WSU did as an organization was we brought Mr. Jared Taylor of American Renaissance fame to come and give a talk on what is white identity. Because the biggest thing that we've seen from essentially mostly self-hating whites, but also minority advocacy groups have been saying over and over, you know, what is white identity? White people don't exist. There is no such thing as a white identity or white culture. So we brought Mr. Taylor in to essentially answer those questions because he's an expert in the field. So we brought him to come and give a talk to a packed house, which was great. I actually felt bad that there were people who had driven as far away from northern Pennsylvania who actually got turned away at the door simply because too many people showed up to the event. You know, we booked a room for 200, and we easily had 400 people who wanted to go to the event. So that was a great feeling that so many people were at least curious as to the message that Mr. Taylor had. But we brought him in to speak, and the event overall was interesting. There's video up right now on YouTube of the event, and American Renaissance is going to be publishing a higher quality version of the video in the next couple days. But it was an interesting event, and it includes six Antifa trying to burst in the door of the event and disrupt it, and the usual sorts of fun questions you get from leftists. But I think overall it was very positive. So now we're looking forward to what we're going to do next.
Tell us about how you got the White Student Union started. What kind of reception did this idea get?
Well, this all goes back to Youth Western Civilization when I was the president of that. And we caused a bit of a stir with after we had Black History Month and Black Pride being written all over campus. You know, with YWC, we decided to show the double standard and write White Pride on campus. And that caused the university to essentially explode and get God knows how many, you know, media outlets at my school asking questions about these evil racists running around campus. So that was exciting. But because of all that pressure, we actually lost our advisor for YWC. So the SGA was more than happy then to kick us out of being SGA affiliated. So a lot of my, you know, myself and a lot of my members were sitting around thinking about, you know, where do we go from here? And there was kind of a response from the student body with the White Pride chalking where people weren't even involved in YWC were coming to us and saying, like, I mean, you know, we have a Black group and a Hispanic group and an Asian group and a Jewish group, but why can't we have a white group? And that we kept hearing that over and over and over again from students on campus. So, you know, we decided that, you know, we might as well kind of tackle the final frontier in terms of, you know, multiculturalism and diversity to have white students be, you know, advocated for. So that's when we started plans last year, but we really picked things up as the school year started because we were getting people who weren't involved in YWC involved in the new White Student Union. And actually my new president or vice president is, you know, he was never involved in YWC, but he just believes in the message. So I think that shows this is a very grassroots sort of effort from, you know, the white students and, you know, at Towson who don't feel represented, who don't feel that they have advocates for their interests, that every other group gets them, but you know, we don't because the color of our skin. But the administration has been less than excited about, you know, the White Student Union forming. As we can see with the Jared Taylor event, for instance, that they required, which I believe to be unconstitutional, citing several Supreme Court cases, they made us pay for security for the event. And considering, you know, the Supreme Court has ruled that you can't charge more in security fees based on the type of speech being given, that, you know, they told us that we had to have 13 police officers at a cost of $3,600. Now, they backed off when I, you know, talked about how that was illegal and decided we only had to pay half of that. But still, a bill of $1,300 just to be able to have, you know, a speaker talk for an hour and a half, I mean, is ridiculous. But I think that kind of shows where the administration is. And I've asked them repeatedly, because our biggest issue has been finding an advisor of, you know, if you know anyone to just let pass it on, you know, anyone who would just be our advisor. And they've not been very helpful with that. And it's just, it's a general sense of trying to stonewall us, but appearing at least, you know, in words that they support freedom of speech and they support us and we can go ahead and do what they want. But for instance, the president of the university, President Lusky, was actually at the Jared Taylor event and was going around to all the black students and apologizing, you know, as the head of the university, apologizing that we have to go through this and apologizing for the WSU. So I think that's very telling. When you have the head of your university going around and groveling to black students, begging their forgiveness because white students want to stand up for themselves, I think that really shows the environment we're dealing with. So it's been exciting, and that's why we're actually currently looking into several free speech advocates in Maryland possibly coming to our aid, because we feel there's been some very large and egregious constitutional violations essentially trying to keep the white student union from being able to be formed. So, you know, we're a grassroots movement. They're not going to stop us, but they're doing everything they can.
How many members are there of the white student union?
Well, and that's the great thing that, you know, we started with about, you know, 8 or 9 of us before the school year started, because a lot of my people with YWC graduated. Some of my best activists, you know, they were seniors last year, so they're gone. So we started with about 8 or 9. And then we started doing, you know, putting up flyers, and that caused some controversy. So it got, you know, more publicized on social media. And then we were creeping up to 12 members, 15 members. And now after this latest event, students came out and got their questions answered and saw what we were about. I mean, we're up over 24, which is fantastic. So the idea that we're not even technically SGA affiliated yet, but there's 24 students who are interested in, you know, in being part of this organization. And, you know, it's not just going out and doing activism. You know, we've had people, you know, that have been volunteering to, you know, create flyers, you know, go out and do chalkings for events, you know, helping design the website that we're doing, writing blog posts, things like that. So it's a really, you know, it's a concerted effort amongst all the students who are interested in making this the most effective political advocacy group on campus and growing it. Because if we can get, you know, within a couple of weeks to 24 members, there's no reason, you know, we can't easily double that by the time the semester's ending. So, yeah, we started small and humble, but we're working towards something big.
That's great. There's an article that's published at Countercurrents by Andrew Hamilton called Join the Dance, which is a commentary on a video that was posted on YouTube a few years ago of an event that happened at the Sasquatch Music Festival in Washington State. And basically the story is that there was some guy who was just off in the grass on his own dancing. He was a dancing fool, just hopping up and down and enjoying himself. And some other guy saw him and ran over there and started hopping up and down and dancing. And then suddenly a whole crowd formed around them and they were all dancing. And the commentary, which was really, really profound, was that the difference between a lone nut and the leader of a movement is the first person who follows, the first person who goes over and starts dancing around too. And once you have a few of those people who decide to follow, those early followers, suddenly big things can form very quickly. So that's really good that you've got some momentum in that direction. And it's really positive if you have people who don't even identify themselves with you necessarily, or who won't identify with you, but who will stand up for your rights. Have you had any people like that on the campus, whites or non-whites, who say, I'm not really behind this, but these people should have a right to organize and a right to exist?
Well, and some of the best support we've had in terms of our constitutional rights has been from the College Libertarians. Now, last year, there was some tension between YWC and the Libertarians, because obviously Youth for Western Civilization took a much stronger stance on things in terms of social values and things like that Libertarians do not. But they've been very supportive in terms of at least acknowledging that, one, we bring up important free speech concerns on campus, and two, that we have a right to organize. So I'd like to give my personal, you know, thanks and shout out to them. But also, we've had a surprising number of non-whites, you know, especially in the black community, of people saying, look, if we actually want to live up to the principles of equality that Towson says it does, whites need to have their group too. That truly is racial equality, where everyone, you know, is treated equally and given the same representation. But the problem is that it seems so often in the black community that those voices of sanity are being shouted down. But, you know, I'm thankful for when anyone actually stands up, you know, and supports us. So we do have those supporters on campus who, might not necessarily like everything we have to say, but at least acknowledge that we have, one, a legitimate reason to exist, and two, a constitutional, you know, right to exist. So it's slow going in terms of essentially winning people over and showing them, you know, exactly what positives we can bring to campus. But like you said, once there's the first person, it becomes easier for each successive person to at least acknowledge we have a right to be here. So hopefully we're going to have, you know, more voices standing up for us in the future, but we at least have some good people in our corner right now.
That's great. So what kind of news coverage has the White Student Union and the recent Jared Taylor event garnered? I understand that you've gotten some press from all over the globe.
That is true, and it's been very interesting that you know, after we were flyering and we were starting in the planning stage for the Jared Taylor event, I was sitting and talking with my vice president, and I got a text message from one of my buddies that said, "Congratulations." I was a little bit confused, and I loaded my Facebook, and one of my friends had posted, you know, "Congrats on being on Drudge," and I just kind of stopped the world and then went to Drudge Report, and right there was a link to a story about, you know, the Towson University White Student Union. So that's when I realized this was going to be a much bigger news story than I thought it was. So, I mean, we've gotten coverage, obviously, from all the local media outlets, local talk radio, you know, all the local affiliates of the main stations. But being on Drudge Report was interesting. And I did not get to see it, but I've had multiple people tell me that CNN did a story. Huffington Post has reported this. I actually did an interview with them last week that there should be a new article coming out sometime soon. But perhaps one of the most interesting events was a Taiwanese, I guess, online program did a CG video of this news story, which was very bizarre that, you know, I wasn't offended by it because I think there was just a very large cultural disconnect between Taiwan and the United States where we were portrayed as, you know, Klansmen with burning torches running around. But at the same time, the Black Student Union was portrayed as sitting in a drum circle, banging on a drum, and the feminist group was shown burning bras. So I feel like the stereotypes of American culture maybe don't have the nuances overseas, but that was very interesting. And of course, we have all the usual suspects for the enemies of people who are pro-white advocates of, you know, the One People's Project, Imagine 2050, and most famously the SPLC. And the Anti-Defamation League. That those groups have taken it upon themselves to, I mean, it's almost like they're writing weekly articles about me and the White Student Union now, which is, you know, it's good to know that we're driving the enemy that crazy, but it's almost ridiculous that they continue to kind of harp on these points of trying to demonize people because, you know, I think it's evident that myself and the members of my organization aren't going to be insulted by name calling, that we've realized that the left really is, you know, it's a toothless tiger. They can't do anything to us other than call us names. So, I mean, if they want to keep wasting ink printing different stories about us, that's on them. But this truly has become a global news story. You know, actually, even some reporters from France, I have scheduled an interview for next week. So it's kind of, it's very interesting. I'm surprised at how large this got, but I'm glad because it gives, you know, it gives the ability for us to get the message out there to an audience who normally wouldn't hear it. So I've been excited about it.
So how have you been defamed by the Anti-Defamation League?
Well, I mean, it's all the usual insults. The, you know, of course, the first one is always white supremacist, you know, bigot, et cetera, et cetera. And it's, you know, it's the same game that we need to understand. I mean, Saul Alinsky in Rules for Radicals, you know, spelled it out. The way that if you have a political enemy, what you do is you call him names and isolate him from the rest of the mainstream community. So thereby, even people in the mainstream who might agree with some of their principles back away from it because they're afraid. So, I mean, it's the same story that, you know, it's me, it's any pro-white advocate who, you know, is just standing up for his people and literally asking for the same treatment that every other ethnic group gets. And, you know, they you know, defame us all the time. You know, the SPLC and the ADL especially are full of, you know, I think it's very evident anti-white bias by the stories they publish. So, but it's all name calling, you know, and false associations and, you know, exaggerating things. And of course, you know, myself, I'm a member of the League of the South. And they of course cherry pick one quote, you know, and they repeat it in every article. So, you know, that's the one quote they have that is generally taken out of context, you know, to try and defame every organization that they disagree with politically. They find one time, one person over the course of an organization's entire history to try and insult it. So it's the same show that, you know, people in the movement have been experiencing for a long time, but it doesn't bother me because the worst they can do is call me names, and I'm trying to make real political change for our people. So I think that's far more important than, you know, worrying about, you know, having names, you know, hurled at me, because it's not the end of the world.
So tell me about your awakening. How did you become aware of the sorts of issues that you've been fighting for?
I'd have to say my awakening probably started in high school. That very early on, you know, my freshman year, that I was always interested. I grew up in a very small town and didn't have a traffic light yet. So, you know, I grew up around hunting and firearms and things like that. So, you know, I would be going to gun shows, and eventually, you know, as I got into high school, I started looking at the book tables, which, you know, is usually very interesting at gun shows. So, yeah, I started picking up books like Enemies Foreign and Domestic, which, you know, is a very – it's not necessarily a pro-white book, but it talks about, you know, it talks about the government and this bias and, you know, the patriot movement kind of. And that's what kind of segued me into doing more research online and, you know, reading kind of the who's who of right-wing literature. And I think my final, you know, that kind of fully pulled the wool over my eyes was when I read Sam Francis's book on race. And it was done in such a professional and articulate manner that, you know, what the media says for people who, you know, believe in white identity and support, you know, white rights, you know, they always portray a pot-bellied Klansman or, you know, a skinhead who has like a swastika tattoo on his forehead, like beating up random, you know, people in the street because of the color of their skin. And they never show you, you know, someone who has done their research, knows the facts, and simply is talking about the truth. And that's, you know, once that happened, I got into reading Pat Buchanan, going through, getting back all of his books he's ever written. And that's why I was super excited, you know, this year when he came out with Suicide of a Superpower, because I think I bought a dozen copies. I've been passing around to people who are, you know, younger than me, who are starting to have their awakening. But once you realize that essentially the situation that whites are in, you really start to question everything around you. And I know I'm probably preaching to the choir, but once you see what's going on with our people, that there's a legitimate genocide going on, both culturally and demographically, not only in this country, but globally, it really just changes the way you see everything. So, you know, it's kind of like a snowball rolling down a mountain. You know, it started small, and it just kept rolling for me, where, you know, you read more books, you talk to more people, you hear more stories, and you really get a grasp about what's going on that's far larger than people give it credit for. And you really find out that there are people who are legitimate enemies of essentially the, you know, the white race that really actually want our extinction. And it's interesting, but it allows you to see things in a much different way. So it's been a long process for me. I'd say probably over the last 7 years, from about 14 to present day, has been, you know, a continual growth and, you know, continue to increase my understanding. But it's been a roller coaster ride, but it's always been gratifying, because knowing that you're learning the truth, you know, is very liberating. It might not be popular, it might not be what you learn in the, you know, the mainstream media, but you know it's right. So that's been a very, you know, positive experience for me.
So how has your family reacted to your racial awakening and to your activism on campus?
Well, it depends on which family member. On one hand, I have, you know, some of my family that just says, Matt, why won't you be quiet? Just go and get your degree, like you're never going to get a job. But there's the other side of my family, you know, it's not on my dad's side or my mom's side, it's just intermingled, which is very interesting to talk to, you know, members of my family. You know, some of them are actually very supportive, and they're not even necessarily supportive of my views. They're just supportive that I believe in something and I'm standing up for it. Because, you know, one thing I was always taught was, you know, I was always a little bit stubborn. You know, you can go back and ask my mom about, you know, being 5 or 6 years old and being, you know, as stubborn as can be. But, you know, I've always been vocal about what I believed in, and I was always encouraged that when you know that something's right, you fight for it. So, you know, I have members of my family who really just, they don't necessarily understand my racial awakening or my activism, but they're proud of me for being, proud of who I am and fighting for what I believe in. So, yeah, I'd say it's regardless of your politics, that's something you're going to find in every family. There's some people that are going to love it, some people are going to hate it, and some people are going to just kind of shrug their shoulders and say, we love you anyway, no matter what you do. So it's been interesting, but I know my family is always there for me and they always love me. So even if they don't necessarily agree with what I'm doing, they're always supportive. So I'm very blessed.
So tell us a bit about reactions that you've gotten from fellow students or professors, both positive and negative ones, and how you feel about that. Do you feel that the campus is a hostile learning environment, a hostile living environment, or do you feel pretty at home there?
I mean, Towson University, I don't think it's home at all. And that's honestly no disrespect meant. It's just the idea that, the culture that's, pushed on campus is so left-wing. I mean, it's, I have friends that, have visited UC Berkeley, and they tell me stories, and I go, yeah, that kind of sounds like my campus. That it's a very, on one hand, it's politically apathetic. There's a lot of people that just don't care. But the people who are politically active and vocal are very, very, very left-wing. I mean, honest to God, communists, walking around. I've seen people with a hammer and sickle on their shirts, to just the radical feminists, the gay and lesbian activists, the illegal immigrant. Like, it's if there's a left-wing cause in the world, then I can guarantee there's a club for it on my campus. So it's kind of disheartening. But, the reception I've gotten has been mixed. The people who, are on the left, who, are self-described, black supremacists or black nationalists, the illegal immigrant activists, things like that, they hate my guts. They really honestly do. And, I saw that last year, with YWC, that, we face things like my female members with YWC when, if they're wearing YWC t-shirts, we get harassment all the time. And, I think it's funny, the left is usually so cowardly. They wouldn't confront the male members in our t-shirts, but they'd go up to women who they thought that they could bully. And I mean, I had girls last year who were threatened with being raped to death because they were wearing a t-shirt leftists disagreed with politically. And I could get into dealing with the police and the administration in a million and one different ways, but none of those experiences were ever positive. So it's that, it's the cycle of they're so left-wing. It's almost sickening, but usually they will walk by and say, I'm going to kill you, but they don't back it up, or they might, scream bigot or racist at you when they're walking across the quad, but they never face you. They never actually, if something they believe in so much, they don't really back it up. I mean, it's like we saw in the Jared Taylor event where, six Antifa, storm through the back entrance, take two steps into the doorway and start screaming obscenities. But then when they see that we're about to get up and confront them, they run away like cowards. So it's, it's sad, but they that's just the way they are. But I mean, I've had professors who have openly told me that they find me disgusting. And that, my views belong back in the 1950s and not in 2012, not in the 21st century, should be having this bigotry and hate at a university, a place of learning. Like, people like you don't belong here. So, I mean, I've had that. And, people, by now on campus know who I am pretty much. I've been in the school newspaper and the local media enough that they know, pretty much everyone knows who I am and knows what I believe in and what I stand for. So, there's been a lot of tension on campus with people who just disagree with me politically or just believe whatever they're told by, their peers that, secretly we're all a bunch of robed Klansmen or, skinheads like beating people up, in the darkness of night. But in the midst of that, there are really positive things that happen. And that's kind of what keeps me going and, is really good. For instance, I was at the CVS right down the street from the university and, I was just getting a prescription filled and the pharmacist behind the counter, looked at me and said, "You look familiar." And I said, "Well, do you watch the news?" And she was like, "You're the white student union guy." And she went, "My daughter's at Towson. Thank you so much for what you're doing. I wish I had the courage to do this 30 years ago when I went there." And, it's experiences like that that just make you feel good that it's not just, the little group that has decided to start the white student union. There really is support outside in the community. And that's been good. You know, there are students who would, you know, who walk by that when we're handing out flyers or things like that, they take one and they go, you know, keep up what you're doing. I can't join you because, you know, I have a scholarship or, you know, my friends wouldn't understand. Keep doing what you're doing. You know, I believe in it. And then they go off and there's far more support than, you know, the left and the media is willing to give us credit for because they're trying to tell the world that we're just some, you know, fringe lunatic group. You know, if, you know, two guys sitting in a basement, well, I'm sorry. I mean, it's a dynamic organization of your peers that legitimately stand up for what they believe in. And even beyond the people who will join the organization, there's a lot of support on campus. So I've been overall pleased. For every bad experience, I always have two or three good ones. And that, I think, is very telling where the left might be the loudest, you know, and control the media, but they don't control the hearts of the people. That people might be silenced by political correctness, but when they're given an opportunity to express what they really think, I say more often than not they're on our side.
One thing that activists always need to do is to guard against burnout. And burnout happens when you are constantly having to give more spiritually, emotionally than you get from what you're doing. It's the psychological equivalent of being on a starvation diet where you're not taking in enough calories to physically sustain yourself. And there's a spiritual equivalent of being on that kind of starvation diet. And it's very important to hear that overall you're getting more positive experience and more positive feedback from other people and from your own sense of what's right than you're getting negative feedback. Because if you don't get that positive feedback, it is going to burn you out. So have you had to struggle with burnout issues, or are you feeling generally that this is really sustaining you and making you stronger by being in this struggle?
Well, I mean, I experienced last year, for instance, the YWC, that towards the end, I mean, it got a little rough in terms of burnout because, you know, the problem I faced with most of my guys graduating and just, you know, the environment on campus was so toxic towards the end of last year. That, you know, part of me just wanted to, like, you know, hang up my activist, you know, boots and just say, you know, forget it. But, you know, there's those times, and I really think that my faith plays an important role in this, you know, where, you know, through these struggles and these hard times, I've only become more devout in my faith. And that really, you know, kind of keeps me, when I'm running on low, recharges me. So it's not only the positive responses, but it's, you know, there's something else. And, you know, the community that I have with the people who were involved in the movement, I mean, that is invaluable. So, I mean, for instance, this year has been, it's stressful. And, you know, I might, you know, laugh and stuff, but when the left is saying the most, you know, horrible things about you and trying to defame your character and make sure you'll never get hired and, you know, telling the world that you're an evil Nazi racist, killed 6 million Jews, et cetera, I mean, it does weigh on you and it sucks. And the one thing that's also bothered me the most is I've seen on forums, you know, that are involved in the movement, that, you know, sometimes our own people, you know, are denouncing us as either we're not going far enough or we've gone too far, or, you know, the favorite thing I enjoyed last year was when there were people on some, you know, pro-white forums were saying that obviously this Matthew Heimbach and his group of activists are agents of, like, the Mossad, and then they've been, you know, taken over by the Zionists to make, like, pro-white people look bad. Like, it's that sort of thing where when your own people are shooting you in the back, like, I expect it from the communists, but it just, it weighs on you, and it gets really annoying, because you kind of just want to grab someone by the shoulders through the computer and go, you know, I'm doing this for you, stupid. Like, I'm trying my honest to God best to help us, to help our people, and what you want to do is, you know, instead of constructive criticism, you know, calling us names and telling us how bad of a job and how evil we are, instead of, you know, helping, maybe getting out from behind the keyboard and actually coming out to one of our events or donating money or things like that to allow this to happen. So, I mean, that does lead to burnout, and it sucks. So that's, like, for instance, this weekend, you know, we had a very important week. The Jerry Taylor event happened. We put out nearly 2,000 flyers for the event, and, you know, we wrapped everything up. So, you know, personally, I'm taking a trip down to visit some of my friends that are, you know, in Lynchburg, Virginia. So I'm going to take the weekend off. I'm going to enjoy myself, you know, go to church with my friends and just kind of, you know, recharge where, you know, I know my limits personally. And I encourage that for all my activists that, you know, the movement is important. Fighting for the cause is important. But if you're, you know, essentially if you're just a husk, you're not valuable to anyone. You know, that's actually a negative, because when you're burned out, you know, you get angry. You might say something stupid, might do something stupid when you're put in a stressful situation, because you're tired and beat down, you want to lash out. So, you know, I encourage everyone that essentially I said, you know, this is the weekend off. We're not having any meetings. You know, we're not even going to talk about business. Everybody go and have a good time. Enjoy yourself. And then on Monday, you know, it's back to the front, essentially. But, you know, like you said, it's something you got to learn, because everyone has their limits. So, you know, last year I kind of learned mine. So I'm trying to be as productive as I can, because now, especially, you know, being a leader of an organization, I'm not only responsible for myself, I'm responsible for those who have given, you know, the trust in me to lead them. So I'm making sure hopefully everyone is taken care of, and, you know, that allows us to be as effective as possible to stick it to the enemy every single day.
What has prevented people from creating white student unions all over America? Why isn't there a white student union on every campus in the United States?
Well, you know, I think the reason why, you know, this is kind of a revolutionary idea, and I know that, for instance, there were, you know, some white student unions or European advocacy groups on campuses before, but I mean, they always, it's like they never actually took the total step, that they kind of tried to play it in the lines. And I think that is one problem, that if we're actually going to stand up for whites and we're going to advocate for our own political interests, we need to make that break, you know, from the mainstream, which is inherently anti-white, and actually take a stand for something. So I think that's one thing, you know, it's people not being, you know, going far enough. But actually, I mean, it's a cycle of white guilt. You know, it's something that we're told about in classrooms, you know, from kindergarten through college, that, you know, continually we need to pay for the sins of our ancestors, that it was horrible, that, you know, I have on my back giving, you know, smallpox infested blankets to the Indians, and, you know, I bombed Hiroshima. I actually was the head of all the slaving ships that ever, you know, existed. You know, it's all those things that they just tell you to feel bad about, feel guilty about, and then they continue over and over to say, whenever white people are organized, whenever they get together and advocate for their interests, they turn into the Third Reich. They turn into the Ku Klux Klan. They turn into, you know, a violent regime that goes and commits genocide and oppresses everyone in the world and loots, rapes, murders, and steals. And that's just, I mean, that is the line. You know, every single anti-racist group in the world, you know, that's their line. And, you know, I don't have to tell any of the listeners, they know this. Anti-racist is a code word for anti-white. It's that simple. And our mainstream media and our education system is quote-unquote anti-racist. And that's just what it is. So I think it's a combination of things. But, you know, what I've seen talking with people in Europe, especially Germans, is very interesting. That especially with Germans, because they have war guilt, you know, and they're told, you know, more than we are in America about, you know, feeling sorry for the sins of your ancestors. But this new generation that's coming up, you know, that's around my age, maybe a couple little years older, they're starting to understand that they don't have to keep paying for things that they never did. And, you know, you don't have to be, you know, a Nazi to love your people. You know, you don't have to be going and trying to, you know, exterminate the globe like the media tells us white people do. You can actually love your own people. You can want to advocate for their own best interests. You want to stop the destruction, you know, of the white race demographically, and that's okay. So that's that sort of thing. I think that the cycle of white guilt really is coming to an end, because essentially I think we've just, you know, they've run out of steam, you know, in terms of telling us this, because we're so far removed from all of these alleged crimes of our ancestors, it just loses its power. Because you think about it this way, any black student who's my age and going to school now has grown up in affirmative action America, where they get scholarships, jobs, preferential treatment based on the color of their skin. Where, you know, there is no 21-year-old college student who was in Selma, Alabama, or, you know, any other place, having police dogs turned out on them, or, you know, water hoses shot at them as they're advocating, you know, for the best interests of their people. Like that didn't happen to them. That they've grown up in this society where, you know, things are actually tilted in their favor. And I think as whites, we're starting to see that, where why are we being punished and having to, you know, for instance, not be able to go into the school we want, or to get the jobs that we deserve for working hard, or even get the job, you know, that we are the most qualified for, perhaps, because something someone did in another state or even another country 100 years ago. So I think this all boils down to the cycle of white guilt is finally being broken, and there's an identity, you know, crisis essentially in the white community where we're questioning what we've been told, the idea that there is no white identity and there is no white culture. I think people are starting to reject that, especially as, you know, demographic shift in America and in the West, where we're seeing these other cultures take over essentially our country and are replacing what we knew and what we grew up with and what our ancestors fought and died for with something entirely foreign. And that's waking people up to knowing, to, you know, and saying, this is not right. You know, we inherited this land and I want to pass this on and this culture to my children, to my grandchildren. So that's where I think whites are becoming much more vocal, much more organized. And it's just, I think we're only going to see this continue from here. So, you know, it's reflected very much in Europe. And they're always a couple years ahead of us. But I see this, you know, in America being the start. I'm not saying, you know, I am the start of the resurgence of the white identity. But this is just one part of whites in America and the West in general rediscovering who they are and realizing that we are facing a crisis that our people haven't faced probably since 732 with Charles Martel, where the enemy is at the gates and there's a fight for our very survival about to happen. So we need to be able to know, you know, who we are as a people and what we're fighting for. So I think that, you know, we might have now one white student union, but in the future, I see this as something potentially catching on. And, you know, it's actually great. There's a university in Texas now that is hosting Jared Taylor later this month, where, you know, I was messaged by the guy who's organizing the event and said, I saw you're bringing Jared Taylor. That's a great idea. I'm going to do it too. You know, and there's been people at colleges around here who came to the event with Jared Taylor and said, wow, like maybe I can do this too. You know, maybe, you know, if the Towson White Student Union, you know, picks up steam, gets SGA affiliated and becomes, you know, a part of the institution, you know, there's students at other universities who are saying, well, why can't I do this? So, you know, even in the small microcosm of, you know, Towson, just as one town, you know, there's a white identity brewing. So I'm just happy to be a part of it, and, you know, I'm trying to do everything I can to help it along. But now that we've kind of broken free, at least partially, from, you know, this white guilt, I think we're only going to see this sort of movement increase, hopefully dramatically, in the next couple of years.
That's very encouraging. So what advice do you have to people who want to start a white student union at their campus?
I mean, I would say the biggest advice, you know, is what I said earlier, is don't be afraid of name calling. That, you know, sticks and stones, it's that simple. That the enemy has realized that there are two ways they can control us. One is fear of being on the outside, you know, of being demonized as, you know, racist or white supremacist, whatever, you know, name they want to come up with. They'll throw that at you, and it doesn't even matter if it sticks. That they're just, they've taught people to be so afraid of even being accused of something that they don't want to do anything. They're afraid of it. And when you finally realize that, you know, it's like Wizard of Oz, that there is no magic. The wizard is just a man behind a screen. That's very empowering. And you realize that they truly don't have any power over you. That, I mean, how many people really care about the newest report from the Southern Poverty Law Center? You ask your average American and they don't care. Even, you know, extreme moderates like, you know, John Boehner come out and, you know, have denounced the SPLC. Like, the left's whole stranglehold is loosening, as kind of, I think, their entire worldview is being exposed as being false. So, you know, students who want to get involved in the pro-white movement, don't worry about what they're going to call you. Because, you know what, at the end of the day, it doesn't matter. Your people matter more than you know, worrying about being called a couple names. Because, you know, you honestly can't look at your grandchildren one day, you know, and how bad things can be, hypothetically, and they ask, you know, how did we get here? And you go, well, I mean, I was going to do something, but, I mean, they might have called me names. Like, they might have put my picture online. Like, I just didn't want to do that. I just wanted to keep my head down. Because that's not an excuse. You know, if our ancestors could fight back the enemy at the gates of Constantinople, you know, we can do it too, when all you need to do is organize a student group. So I would say be bold, because you know what? The enemy is going to hate you regardless. So you might as well stand up for what you believe in and stand up for your people. And then don't worry about what names they're going to call you. So find a couple of like-minded individuals. It doesn't take that many. Just find them, get your core group, and start working towards organization, you know, putting up flyers, doing chalking, you know, seeing what speakers can come to campus. And then, you know, thereby, by putting that out there, people will be interested in what you have to say, and, you know, the people will come. You know, it's kind of like Field of Dreams. If you build it, you know, he will come. That the people who you know, think the way you do will show up. That you just need to throw that flag up and say, look, I'm not afraid, I'm not scared, come join me. And once you have that, you know, you can make a big difference. So it's not that hard. All it takes, you know, the hardest part is the first step. And I know there's a lot of college students, you know, and people in general out there who are afraid of taking the first step. But once you do the second, the third, the fourth step, it's so much easier because you know what you're doing is right. So I would encourage everyone, if they have the slightest inkling and try to organize a similar group, you know, network with, you know, the White Student Union, network with other pro-white advocates, and get out there and do it, because it's not that hard. It doesn't take that much effort, but it makes a big difference in the long run.
When I talk to people about this, I say, look, the fact that you exist means that all of your ancestors who crossed oceans in tiny leaky boats and who fought against savages and who faced more than just harsh words, they actually faced guns or axes or clubs, and they all prevailed. You know, they all prevailed, and the proof of that is that you're here now. And so why are you backing down at the thought of having your picture posted on the internet or having a few harsh words thrown at you when all of your ancestors had to have prevailed against much worse for you to actually be here and be in existence? So, Matt, what are some of the things that other white advocates have done to help you out? And what are some of the things that white advocates have done that have gotten in the way or discouraged you?
Well, I mean, I think the largest help that I've had is just simply having, you know, the support of, you know, being able to, for instance, go on websites and read things to be further, you know, educated, you know, being able to get books, being able to be listening to radio programs like this, by just having those little things to, you know, help you know that you're not alone. That's one great thing. And then, of course, you know, Jared Taylor with coming to speak on campus, that was a great, you know, thing, because that gets his message out to thousands upon thousands of people, not just the 200 people in that room. And, you know, that emboldens people. So, you know, I love the fact that, you know, people that are other white advocacy groups come out to, you know, came out to the first event and have told me they're going to come out to the other events, that, you know, look up on the website, see what we're doing, and then publish that online. So people, you know, on our side, but also in the mainstream, you know, continue to see over and over that, oh, look, there's this group of kids at Towson University who they have a white student union. Like, that's a little weird, but let's see what that's about. So, you know, from commenting online to on news stories in support of us, to just, you know, publicly coming out and saying, like, this is a good idea. You know, Hunter Wallace of Occidental Descent has done great work, you know, talking about us and supporting us. And also the Palmetto Patriot at Southern Nationalist Network has done, you know, a great job of having me on for, you know, podcasts and interviews, and, you know, just trying to get that message out there to as wide an audience as possible. Now, the largest, you know, issue I've had with some pro-white advocacy groups is – I mean, yeah, I kind of touched on it before. The idea that, you know, if just because we're not coming out and you know, saying exactly their party line, and, you know, they've never even asked us, you know, our stances on certain issues, but they come out and they say, well, if he doesn't stand for this, then I might agree with 99% of the things that he says, but he's an agent of the enemy. And, you know, I look at that and I go, no, because, I mean, you know, then that gets, you know, they're putting that online, they're putting that out there in the public discourse of saying, like, if these pro-white advocates who are trying to do something positive, like, we have a small, tiny clash with them, and, like, you know, forget them. And then they call us names. They're shooting us in the back. And that's one of the biggest things. And I think the one largest issue in terms of the overall pro-white movement that I have, you know, that kind of not necessarily has hit the Towson White Student Union, but it's just an issue. The idea that, you know, it seems like there's an awful lot of groups out there that are not national socialists, but they continue to use, you know, swastikas and Third Reich insignias that, you know, are not helping anything. And the majority of these people are not Nazis. They think that's pro-white because that's what the media's told them, and they think that's cool. Well, I mean, I'm sorry, but, you know, we live in a world where 70 years of Allied propaganda and, you know, history books in class and stuff like that has firmly set in people's minds, you know, their perception of certain insignias, you know, certain people, certain medals, you know, things like that, where it's not reaching out to people. You know, it's not getting your average Joe Sixpack, who we need to win over to our side. It's not helping anything. So, I mean, you know, people, you know, calling me up at all hours of the night and saying, like, you know, at your next event, you need to, like, have a swastika flag. And I'm like, no, I'm not a national socialist. And just, no, that's not beneficial. That, you know, it seems parts of the movement are living in the world of, you know, the 1930s, where they just aren't, you know, in touch with how we can actually reach out to middle America to actually advance our cause in any sort of important political way. So, I mean, my one thing I would say to people is, you know, I'm not trying to insult anyone. I'm not trying to demean anyone, because if you're out there advocating for white interests, then you've already taken such a courageous step. I commend you for it. But as a movement, we need to start acknowledging there are positive ways we can make steps forward, and there are ways that are counterproductive. And I think we need to ditch the methods that haven't worked, that people have been trying, you know, since, you know, Commander Rockwell in the 1960s, you know, certain things don't work. So maybe it's time to reinvent ourselves, you know, and stand up for, you know, something that actually has a chance of advancing itself as a movement. So that's kind of the only real complaint I have in terms of the pro-advocacy white groups. But, you know, I would thank the overwhelming majority of pro-white groups who have, you know, supported us at very least, you know, in name by, you know, publishing these stories and, you know, sending little just messages of support, you know, through our email, you know, to me and my members to support us. So, you know, I thank everyone for that support, and I hope it continues, because we're going to keep fighting. So having allies is always appreciated.
The trolls and the attackers and the kooks, they are out there in vast numbers. And I always tell myself, look, just because there are so many crazy people involved with this cause doesn't mean that the cause itself is not correct. And also, I do believe that if people like this did not exist, that our enemies would invent them. And in fact, our enemies do invent a lot of these people. I think a lot of these people who push the whiter than thou, the more Nazi than thou, the more radical than thou kinds of divisive online commentary are really just enemies who are trying to sow discord and create a kind of madhouse atmosphere of hate and craziness that is basically designed to get people like you to give up and go away. I think that that's the purpose of it. And so when you start getting that kind of stuff directed at you, you should really take that as a sign that you are doing good enough work that the enemy or their extended phenotypes or the kooks that do their work for free have decided to try and take you out, to try and drive you out so that we can keep this thing small and dumb and marginal.
I totally agree. I mean, and that's the thing that, you know, the pro-white movement, because the enemy controls the media, has kind of pushed us, you know, to essentially be in our own subculture in certain ways. That, you know, I think your average white American agrees with at least 75% of the things that, you know, you or I believe in, but they're not willing to come out and say it. So the problem with any subculture is you get the crazies. You get the people that are just, you know, essentially social misfits that then want to be a part of something, and they don't even necessarily believe in it. They just latch onto it. And, I mean, I think we need to, as a movement, address that. And we need to get all the people on our side who, again, we might disagree on small points and small issues. But overall, I mean, the fight and the struggle is to stop the extinction of our people. And I think that comes essentially before anything else, that we need to advocate that our people are treated fairly and, you know, stand up against the flood of third world immigration into our countries, you know, stand up for our culture. And if we're going to, we can worry about petty things after, you know, our people are off the brink of extinction, essentially. You know, once we're above, you know, having only like 2.5% of the world's population being white women who can have kids, like when we actually have numbers and our culture is safe, then we can worry about bickering about small things. So I think we need to take those positive steps forward and organizing and, you know, essentially stop trying to be, you know, the leader of, you know, a group of 15 guys that agree 100% with what you do, and instead join with the next group and the next group and the next group, and then organize so we can be a movement of the people really making change, essentially. And like you said, just leave the kooks by the wayside, because they're probably either, you know, infiltrators or idiots. And that's just the way it is, that we need to work on the positive in the organization and move towards something productive instead of worrying about what, you know, a bunch of people who just want to sow discord and hate, you know, have to say.
So a few practical questions, Matt. First of all, how can students who are on a campus who might be thinking the way that you're thinking meet other people like them? Because the first thing you've got to do to form a group is to find a second person, right? So how do you find the second person? If you were a student, if there's a student out there who wants to get things started, what's the first step?
Well, I'd say the first easiest step is, I mean, go create a Gmail account, for instance, and, you know, make up some flyers. I mean, most universities you can, you know, get, you know, printing very, very cheaply, and pick an issue that's important to you, whether it's illegal immigration, affirmative action, something like that, and, you know, put on the bottom, say, you know, for more information, you know, contact X, Y, and Z, you know, at gmail.com. And, you know, that could possibly be a way. Of course, always networking with friends is great. You know, I was very blessed that, you know, last year with YWC that, you know, my number two guy that I'd known since high school. But I know most people aren't going to have that at their university. So, you know, I would say, you know, advertising, it's just putting the flag out there a little bit. Maybe even in classes, not necessarily going all the way, but just, you know, saying your opinion a bit louder. You know, because I've done that, and I've had people come up afterwards and be like, I like what you said. I was thinking that, but I didn't say it. And that kind of opens doors. It's overall, if you live your life in a way where people know what you think, they have to know how far you go. But just a little, just get a little bit of a taste that you're not in, you know, the neocon mainstream conservatives, that you actually, you know, have an identity and you care about it, that the people really will come to you. So it just takes a little bit of effort and a little bit of courage to kind of just, like I said, take that first step. And when you do, I mean, our people are out there. And that's one thing that we can't deny, that they're there. We just need to find them and get them mobilized. So just putting the flag up a little bit, I think, is the best way that people can try and, you know, get that message out there and, you know, start the organization, essentially.
What's the best way that students can get in touch with you?
The best way to get in touch with me is simply shoot us an email at Towson, T-O-W-S-O-N, W-S-U, at gmail.com. That is the best way to get a hold of us, because that goes to me and my exec board. We check it every single day. So if people have questions, concerns, comments, feel free to shoot us a line. Anything we can do to help, you know, we're here to do. And that's one of the right things people need to realize, that we're not trying to just do this for Towson. We're not trying to do this necessarily, you know, just for our community. We're trying to make this to be a real political movement that, you know, it will grow and will get places that will advance our people, essentially. So either shooting us an email would probably be the best way. It also has my phone number on it, so feel free to give me a call, preferably not too late. you know, that's a great way. But also people can check us out at TowsonWSU.blogspot.com. That's where we have our website, and what we do is we do frequent updates in terms of what activities we're going to be doing. We actually just did an update today about there was another example of black-on-white crime on campus where a white female was sexually harassed by four black males. So it's not only us doing stuff, but we're going to try and turn this into kind of a crime watch for, you know, for the community to keep people aware. So I would also encourage people to, if they look at our site and like what they see, start their own website. You know, it's free, it's easy, and just do that to get the message out there. So we're easy to find. So if you all want to talk with us, feel free to get a hold of us, and I'll do anything I can in my power to help.
What about racially aware people who live in college towns and who might like to try and help out with a student group, either getting formed or help them with their projects? I mean, if you lived in a college town in the future and you wanted to encourage the creation of a student group, what would you do?
I would say what I would do is be, you know, active in, you know, pro-white advocacy off campus. Because, I mean, people, at the very least, you're going to have Marxist professors who, you know, come into their class to go, did you hear what those crazy people did, like these racists running around campus? And, like, you know, that could get students to go, like, Well, let me actually find out what really happened instead of what my professor said happened and check up, you know, on the facts, essentially. And that really, I think, can make a difference. So, you know, what I'd say to be involved in is it's not just being, you know, it's not just being aware. That once you're aware, it kind of, it's kind of, I hate to use the analogy, but it's like the Matrix, that once you've been unplugged, you need to be able to, you know, try and you need to awaken other people because the system is against us. So I would say get involved in, you know, any of the local pro-white advocacy groups that are in the area, you know, in the college town, or even if there isn't, you know, try and start a chapter of something and get that off the ground. And I think that would do more than, you know, anything else to encourage students to realize that, well, if there's people like me in the community, then maybe I can do something myself. And then when students decide they want to do something, instantly go and help them, whether it's, you know, providing a little bit of startup money for them to be able to, you know, even just print flyers and things like that to advertise, to go into the events, to, you know, kind of guiding them, especially if you're a bit older, and what you've seen works in the movement and what you've seen hasn't worked, to try and find the way that you can be most helpful. So I think, you know, everyone living every day realizing that, you know, this isn't, you know, it's not a series of, you know, titanic battles, you know, like Stalingrad or something like that. It's a small battle every single day, which, you know, leads up to something either good or something bad. That if we live our lives in a way that is the continual essential struggle, you know, and doing everything we can to raise awareness of our people and to advocate for our, you know, ourselves, that, you know, it becomes second nature. And that's when people around you in your community notice it and then start working with you and get emboldened to do something themselves. So I think that would be my suggestion.
One of the things that happens with student groups, by the very nature of student groups, is that students graduate. And therefore, there's the difficulty in maintaining continuity. So a group will pop up on a campus because there's one guy who's really strongly for it, and then he'll graduate, and then it'll disappear, and then it may be a few years before something else pops up. But although the students come and go, the townies generally remain the same. And so it strikes me that it would be really important for the continuity of student groups to have people who are in the community, who have roots, and who have a strong interest in maintaining student groups, to try and get involved in encouraging them and to always sort of be there as the person you can go to in State College, Pennsylvania, or Corvallis, Oregon, or wherever, to get something going on campus. So that's something that, you know, I don't know how to address that, but if there are people out there who want to become that person, that would be a great person to have in every college town.
I agree. It only takes one. That's the thing. It only takes one person, you know, to really, you know, make a change. So I think people should be encouraged of that, that, you know, especially like you said, if you live in a college town, be that one person, because you can, you know, embolden a lot of students and make a lot of changes in your community. And you never know, you might have the next white student union pop up in your backyard.
Right. Let me ask you, how did you end up raising the money to pay for the security and the room and things like that so that Jared Taylor could come?
Well, that was a blessing. You know, one, that the Community of American Renaissance really came through. That, I mean, we essentially did an appeal on the website that, look, we have about a day to come up with all this money to pay for the security fees. And they donated, you know, very generously. And that was amazing. And that, I mean, that's real activism right there to allow us to do this event. That is important for repercussions. Then also things like, you know, raising money for, you know, rentals of different things like that, in terms of sound equipment, stuff, you know, of that nature that's, you know, we just don't have, unfortunately. You know, it's members of the community that have donated. That there's one gentleman who, you know, is involved in the cause and, you know, reads American Renaissance and stuff like that, who, you know, helped me with YWC, who I've become good friends with, but he's contributed amazingly generously, you know, to us. And that's been fantastic to have just that you know, guy in your corner that really believes in what you're fighting for and to help financially, but also just to be there. If, you know, you need to talk to someone, and essentially just to blow off steam, that they're there. So it was, you know, this event and, you know, financially, it's been a combination of just local members of our community here, you know, essentially like you're talking about the townies who, you know, are here and believe in the message, who have donated their time and their energy and their money towards us. And then also, you know, we were very graciously blessed by the American Renaissance community for donating such a large amount of money in such a short period of time. But, you know, that was, it was fantastic and allowed the event to go off. So it's, you know, it's a team effort. It's not just one person. It's not just, you know, a couple people. It really is a group effort of, you know, many individuals from many different organizations who are united in the same goal.
Yeah, but those group efforts demand that there's got to be somebody who goes first. And I really congratulate you, and I want to thank you for being one of these vanguardists who gets out there and gets pelted with some tomatoes and some harsh words, but who actually gets these things started. So, Matt, I think this has been a really very good interview. I want to thank you, and I want to give you a chance to plug your website again and make sure that if people want to keep supporting your work, that they know how to get in touch with you.
Sure. Our website, again, is Towson, TowsonWSU.blogspot.com. And we're actually in the process of setting up a bank account and a P.O. box for if folks want to donate to the cause and help us bring in more speakers like Jared Taylor, that hopefully we're going to have that up and running sometime next week so people can donate to us. But, you know, anyone who wants to get in contact with us, feel free to shoot us an email at Towson, like I said, TowsonWSU@gmail.com. So either through the website or through the email is a great way to get in contact with us. And, you know, we're going to keep on fighting and keep on, you know, being the vanguard of the folk, essentially, trying to fight for our people. So, you know, anyone who wants to follow us, you know, feel free.
That's great. Thank you so much.
It was a pleasure.
Countercurrents Radio is the voice of Countercurrents Publishing and the North American New Right. Visit us at www.countercurrents.com. That's counter-currents.com.